Hello, I'm Douglas Johnston, the president and founder of the International Center for Religion and Diplomacy. It's now 13 years in being, and we practice faith-based diplomacy in different parts of the world. My background is generally political military, and before I came here, I was the executive vice president and chief operating officer of the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington for 12 years. I think that we need a much more enlightened understanding of exactly the cross currents of concern, the nuances underlying this conflict. I think that there are elements within Islam these days that are subscribing to a very extremist interpretation of their scripture, and they are acting accordingly and really abusing and misusing scripture. I think that one of the things that we should encourage as strongly as we can is to support mainstream Islam, you know, which you know, subscribes to tenets that all world religions share about neighborly concern and the betterment of humanity, you know? And I'll share with you an anecdote to sort of illustrate that what's important in all of this is to come. You know, bombs and bullets have their place, but if you're going to tackle terrorism, you need to get at the ideas behind the guns, not the guns. Yeah. And an example of this is that one of the projects that our center has been involved in for the last 7 years is enhancing the madrasas in Pakistan, you know, expanding their curriculums to include the physical and social sciences, but with strong emphasis on human rights, particularly women's rights, and religious tolerance. And also to transform the pedagogy to create critical thinking skills among the students. Well, in one of our workshops, back when the Swat Valley was in the news, you know, the Taliban had taken over and a lot of people were losing their heads and the like, and we had a workshop for 16 madrasas surrounding the Swat Valley. And toward the end, one of the gentlemen stood up, a madrasa leader, who was happened to be a commander in Lashkar-e-Taiba. And he said, you know, I came for one reason and one reason only, and that's to discredit everything you have to say. He says, but I now find myself standing here full of rage. Rage because for 26 years I have been studying and teaching the Quran the way it was taught to me. He says, after this experience, I feel for the first time in my life I have sensed the soul of the Holy Quran and its peaceful intent. I understand now that the right way to advance Islam is through peace, not through conflict. He said, I'm going to change what I teach my students and I'm going to tell them why. We came back a month later, and sure enough, he was doing exactly as he had said. But we also had a CNN team that came along, and they'd been wanting to document our work for several years, and we finally took them in. And he says it on CNN for God and the entire world to hear. You know, I mean, it was just amazing to me, the courage. You know, if you can work your way past the veneer of hostility and rage and engage these folks, not only do they understand what you're talking about, but many of them become champions of a more enlightened approach and at great personal risk to themselves. So I think it's really this whole idea of the key to terrorism is really, it's not a matter of bullets and bullets. It's a matter of, you know, ideas, you know? And I think that part of the problem, of course, is the United States plays a role in this. It's perceived to be an occupying force in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. And when you read the empirical research that's been conducted on why people become suicide bombers and the like, you find that more often than not, it traces to the angst, the pain of being perceived as being occupied by a foreign force, you know? So I think the United States has to, frankly, in the longer run, we need to change our paradigm. We need to practice what I would call servant leadership at the international level, where we lead more by example than by force. I do believe that that in a context in which religious legitimacy trumps all else, the best antidote for bad theology is good theology. So you need to go back to your scriptures. And the Holy Quran has some wonderful standards that which you just articulated a little bit ago. In terms of context, when Osama bin Laden uses this little phrase, slay the infidels wherever you find them, when you put it back in its literary and historical context and read the next verse, it's very much the opposite. You know, unless they want peace and, you know, this sort of thing, you're not allowed to do slay the infidels wherever you find. And as far as emphasis goes, I go back to the Lashkar-e-Taiba commander, okay, who'd been studying the Quran for 26 years. It depends on what you emphasize. And what you emphasize causes you sometimes to overlook, you know, a deeper truth that that's to be found, you know. Because you can look at the holy text of any religion, and you can find places where it seems to justify militant behavior, you know, extremism, when in fact, in the grand scheme of things, and there are far more verses that go just the opposite direction. And when you put the bad ones in context, they teach a very different message than what people are taking away. So we just have to be much more thoughtful. I think religious leaders have to play a very important role in all this to, you know, and we need to call our own religions back to their basic tenets of peacemaking, neighborly concern, betterment of humanity, one's relationship with one's creator, you know. That's where our ultimate accountability is. And that's kind of what our center practices. We try to move the accountability in the difficult conflict situations from an ideology or a political movement to God itself, God Himself. And when people feel that, they're on better behavior. You know, they tend to be. You know, so we've had some good success with that. And right now, we're involved in the Middle East, and we've been. As I say, involved in Pakistan, Kashmir, Afghanistan, Iran, all over the place. And the common denominator we have is that we seize upon shared religious values to bridge differences between adversaries. The Abrahamic values are very clear about what should be done. But when you get beyond those to Hinduism and Buddhism, for example, in Kashmir, we worked there for 6 years, and we established a very cooperative spirit between the Hindus, the Muslims, and the Buddhists in Kashmir of the next generation leadership, you know. So we're hoping that can help promote peace from within at some point. But it's right here and now, you know, we find that the Christian and Jewish and Muslim, that juxtaposition, we have every reason in the world to cooperate, and we're doing just the opposite. I also think that in addition to religious influence, we need to also be very understanding of cultural influence as well. I'm just totally blown away by some of the risks that people are willing to take to extend hospitality, you know. I wish we in this country had that imbued in us as deeply as I find it in Afghanistan or Pakistan. Well, to have a union, you know, you need a basic commonality of understanding and commitment, you know. And in NATO, they've had that pretty much. It was part of the Cold War, of course, to resist the Soviets. I'm the first to say that I think that Turkey is absolutely critical to everything. Turkey is probably, geopolitically, it may be the most strategic state in the entire region. You know, I'm quite convinced of that. So we're working in hopefully in the right direction, and if Allah is blesses what we're
inshallah.
Doing, you know,
inshallah. Allah rewards you by doing, and then collaboration is very important.
It is.